73632, Buma versus Providence Corp Development. Council ready to proceed, please do so. If you wish to reserve any time, please so state. Yes.
10 minutes and then 5 to reserve. Great. May it please the court, Your Honor. I'm Charles Diaz. My co-counsel is Mary Osfall. We represent Casey Ann Jolene Buma, the surviving spouse and daughter of Jason Buma, who died. He died on a business trip. The appeals officer and the district court made what we feel are errors of law, which allows this court to do a de novo review. I don't think any of the facts, or I don't believe that any of the facts are an issue. The findings of the facts in a nutshell are basically that Mr. Buma was a vice president of sales for Miller Heiman. He traveled for a living. He was a salaried employee. The C-3 form, I think, is at page 147. It shows what his salary was. The testimony shows that about 50% of his time, employer was...
Mr. Diaz, can you hear me? I'm sorry. Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Sir, what does the court do with the finding by the appeals court that O'Callaghan verified that the claimant was riding the ATV at claimant's request for recreational purposes only, with no related work purpose? So what do we do with that?
Let's get into that. May I?
Please.
May I give a little preface then? I'll just blow off the facts then. All right, so NRS 616B, 612.3, a statute enacted in the 40s, basically tells us that any traveling employee is deemed to be in the course of employment. It's a mandatory statute. They use the word shall. The fact that Jason Buma died while he was on a business trip is uncontroverted. As a matter of law, Mr. Buma's death happened in the course of his employment. A traveling employee is necessarily exposed to an increased level of risk than a traditional employee. A traditional employee meaning somebody that steps into his garage, opens his garage door, commutes to his place of employment, and comes back. Mr. Buma was a traveling employee for all purposes. The standard that I'm suggesting that this court adopt is continuous coverage for traveling employees from the time they start their business trip until they come back. They're working the entire time.
Unless they're engaged in a recreational activity.
I don't think that a traveling employee is required to hide in the guest house or hide in a hotel room and not come out. Mm-hmm. Not ever to walk, to ride, to take an Uber, to rent a car.
Does that undermine just basic concepts in workers' comp, coming and going in the course and scope of your employment? Tell me how that factors into this.
It doesn't apply. It doesn't apply because traveling employees have to be imbued with that mantle of an increased risk already. They're at risk from the moment they step out the door. So all of these, and they encounter in the course of their business trip a lot of different scenarios that a traditional employee wouldn't encounter. A business employee has to fly, rent a car, take public transportation, rent a bicycle.
Your employee has to drive to their place of employment, drive home, and... I said a regular employee has to drive to their place of employment, drive home. Doesn't that constitute a risk as well?
It does, but the coming and going rule tells us that those types of risks aren't covered. So an employee leaving his home that gets in an accident or has something happen to him on the way to work, not covered.
Right.
However, when we have an employee, as Mr. Buma was, that is by necessity, whose job title by necessity requires him to travel, totally different set of facts, totally different scenario.
The time he's traveling, is 100% of his time covered by workers' comp? Is that what you're advocating?
I think it has to be. It has to be, unless there's a significant departure.
The more focused argument that he and the person who was hosting him were colleagues and they were together to prepare to do their presentation?
Those are factors that are very important. But the next question after we, the majority opinion across the country, and as stated in Larson's, is the continuous coverage rule. But you have to have some exceptions to that, and that is a specific deviation. So if a traveling employee makes a specific deviation that's so out of the norm that it takes them out of employment, then that's not covered. But that has to be analyzed on a case-by-case basis with the totality of the circumstances. If I traveled down to Vegas to do a case and I stayed at one of the casinos near the courthouse, I would probably not be okay renting an ATV and running it down the street. I'd probably be covered if I took an Uber. Maybe I was covered if I took a Lime bike. Maybe. But when we look at this fact pattern, Mr. Buma is staying on a ranch, 75 acres, close enough to Houston to where he and his colleague, Mickey O'Callaghan, could commute back and forth to the oil and gas conference that was in Houston to give presentations. He arrived at 3:30 in the afternoon, was going to go to dinner. He died before dinner. His first appointment was scheduled at 8:30 the next morning.
Mr. Diaz, let me ask you this question. I frequently stay at the Golden Nugget, have been fascinated by going down the zip line at Fremont. Now, if I were to do that on my own, would I be covered by workers' comp? But if I could convince all my colleagues, one of whom has even suggested this, we do it as a court event, would I be covered?
Well, Judge, Justice Hardesty.
And I definitely want to follow Justice Gibbons down the zip line.
If that outing was designed to be a work-related outing, maybe a networking opportunity or a team-building opportunity, I'd say it was covered.
So, and I don't mean to disparage in any respect the decedent's memory or honor in this hypothetical, but would you place him in this same category? Is the ATV riding in the category of a team building or employment related, and why?
I know that your prior opinion on this issue, the Phillips case, did try to put everything into different categories, and this would probably fall into a neutral category under that analysis. But that analysis doesn't address these issues. And it doesn't address these issues because of the increased risk that traveling employees are placed from the inception of their business trips.
Is this the kind of increased risk, though, that was anticipated, that you place yourself in increased risk by doing a ATV riding or something else?
I'm sorry, say it again.
I want to go to Justice Pickering. Asked you about your suggestion is that you're on the trip. Anything that happens during the trip is covered.
Yes, except something that's a significant departure.
Okay.
Because
so in this instance, where the record that we have is that it is a purely non-work-related recreational activity, that's what we have, factually found by the appeals court, how do we deal with that?
I think we deal with it on a case-by-case basis, given the circumstances surrounding the situation. The situation at every location is going to be different. It's going to be location-based. It's going to be circumstance-based.
Okay, in this case,
we're on a ranch. if you look at the photos, well, the photos are, some of the photos are there. They're not great photos, but I think you can see that it's a very rural location. Dirt roads, 75 acres. I think there was a description. There was fishing there. There was a pond. There's hunting available. And there were ATVs available. I wouldn't analyze this any different than I would, as I said in my brief, a walk around a hotel's grounds. If I was staying, if Mr. Buma had been staying in a hotel, here he's at a ranch.
They what take if an it ATV was not ride.
I don't think it's
ranch.
Any different. I'm sorry.
What if it was not a colleague's ranch? Let's say it was a like Canyon Ranch or one of those spots that he chose to stay and have some amusement in addition to his trip.
That would be a little different analysis, but I'd argue that that would still be covered because I think any traveling employee is entitled to a reasonable amount of recreation or a certain leash. Traveling employees are on a long leash. We know they've got to do certain things to finish their jobs, rent cars, eat, find people, do whatever it is. And we have to recognize, or the law recognizes, that recreation is within that. Now, I wouldn't, within the needs of a traveling employee, I wouldn't categorize, although Mr. O'Callaghan categorized the ATV as purely recreational, I don't think this court should take his words to fulfill for the legal category, which this, for the legal analysis. What we know is that their colleagues, that Mr. O'Callaghan had worked with Miller Heiman for 15 years, that he obtained 100% of his income from his work with Miller Heiman, that Mr. Buma and he had worked together at least twice previously where Mr. Buma had stayed on his ranch. This was not just a recreational trip. The fact that the two decided to ride an ATV before dinner, I think that in setting a ranch, a large ranch in Texas, is absolutely normal and not abnormal. It is not such a deviation under the circumstances that it takes Mr. Buma out of employment.
Mr. Diaz, I'm going to stop you there. You're under the three-minute mark. You didn't request it to hold on to five. We'll give you 4 minutes for your rebuttal. I'd like to hear from
you. I'm sorry, Judge Douglas. I missed it, Justice Douglas.
You're under the four-minute. You requested 5 minutes
yes.
for rebuttal. You are under that. You're under the three-minute mark.
I better sit down. I got caught up.
John Lavery on behalf of the respondents. Justice Stiglitz, you asked, what do I do with the finding of fact? You're stuck with it. You have to accept it for what it is. And what it is something that was adopted by the finder of fact that said this had nothing to do with his employment at all. We came up, we said the facts are undisputed. They are undisputed. What he was doing had nothing to do with his employment at all, period. Basically, what you're being asked to do is adopt a position that says when you leave town and go out of town, everything you do from the time you step out your front door till the time you step back in falls within the course and scope of your employment.
Mr. Lavery, let me ask you, because I thought about counsel's argument, and it was an interesting argument. What occurred to me, though, is what this would do to workers' comp premiums, you know, like that, if it was a great expanse of what's covered here. With that in mind, although that's not our controlling point here, is this a legislative issue versus a court issue, adopting the standard? Is that one of your positions?
Absolutely. You would destroy the premiums. As a matter of fact, I have a note written at the top of one of my cheat sheets here that's specific. I'll read it to you because I wrote it. Think about the chilling effect that that's going to have on the hotel and convention industry in Nevada. If you say, because there's no limitation, everybody that comes to this state is subject to the workers' compensation laws. This is not just a matter of people leaving the state. You come to Nevada for a convention, and you're here all week. And there's no controls over what you do other than you need to be at the seminar at 8 and you need to leave the seminar at 5. And everything you do after that, don't have at it. Now you're going to look at every employer in this state, every employer in the country. You're going to look at the hotels, you're going to look at the convention industry, and you're going to say, guess what, folks? When these guys come to town, everything that they do is your responsibility, and you're stuck with it. That makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Now, the argument's been put forth to you, well, we talked about the coming and going rule, and Justice Perry, I believe your comments were well-founded, because what you've got is basically what you're being done is asked to adopt the positional risk test by virtue of being out of state. We've already rejected the positional risk test in the state to begin with. Because what you're saying is by virtue of the fact that you have left the state and you're employed, we want you, that's enough to bring it within the course and scope of your employment. It's not. The question was one of deviation. The deviation is clear. Short of playing chicken on a railroad track, at what point do you say, I'm down here to put on a seminar to talk about sales, but I've gone to a ranch on my own with a friend, and we're doing something that is acknowledged to have nothing to do with why we're here.
Well, can I ask you a different scenario?
Absolutely.
Following up on Justice Hardesty's hypothetical here. Let's say Chief Justice Douglas ordered all 7 of us to ride the zip line as part of a team-building exercise on Fremont Street. It breaks, and we're all crippled and all as a result of it. We're directed to do it as part of our employment duties. How does that fit in?
Well, that's exactly right, because your employer has now directed you, or at least your superior for purposes of being the Chief Justice versus one of the other Associate Justice on the court, has directed you to do something. So if I tell you, look, you need to go do this and you get hurt doing it, I'm really not in a position to say, well, I recognize that as your boss, as your employer, I told you to do it, but now that you got hurt, I really can't cover it. There's a huge distinction there. This is a purely personal endeavor.
Wait a second. There was, I mean, the two of them were co-presenters, correct?
Absolutely. At some point.
And
not yet, but at some point, yes.
They were to be co-presenters.
They were to be, that is correct.
And they were fostering their relationship with one another. So it wasn't a complete just choosing to stay at a ranch and ride ATVs that was unconnected to the purpose of the trip, correct?
I don't know that I would necessarily agree with the fact that it was unconnected to the purpose of the trip. These people are friends.
Okay.
What they were doing at the time, the whole purpose behind them being there was to go out to dinner, to have fun with each other, to go ride ATVs. So was he in the state of Texas for a business purpose? Absolutely. I'm not about to look at you and say he wasn't. But I can say that his activities and what he was doing at the time.
What if he was soliciting O'Callaghan as a client of some sort and was directed to visit with him and try to cook up additional business with him?
Then he's directed to do so, but it goes right back to the same question. It goes back to he was directed by his employer to do something. So under those circumstances, I would be hard-pressed to look you in the eye and say, my employer told me to do something. I did what they asked me to do. They were paying me to do it at the time. And now, because I was acting within the course and scope of my employment, which is what your question is asking me, he's within the course and scope of his employment, he's furthering the purposes of his employer. It is undisputed that he was not furthering the purposes of his employer. The facts are undisputed, and the fact was he was involved in a recreational activity and for no other purpose. And because it's no other purpose, you can't then jam a square peg in a round hole and try and pretend like it is. We're rewriting the facts, and we're stuck with the facts as they were found by the appeals officer, assuming that there was substantial evidence to support it, and that's undisputed.
So for your purposes, you wouldn't distinguish between traditional employees and traveling employees when it comes to recreational activity. You'd apply Holt, and it fits or it doesn't.
Yes. If I have to give you a yes or no answer, I'm going to say yes. Because in the traveling employee scenario, this gets back to the positional risk test, simply by virtue of being a traveling employee, you're embraced as a whole. I wholeheartedly reject that notion. Now, if I'm riding an Uber or I'm doing these other things that were suggested to you, those are attenuate to my employment. I'm there, I'm having to transport myself. I drove down here from the airport this afternoon. If I get in a car accident because I'm going to the Supreme Court to argue something, I'm acting within the course and scope of my employment. If I get up in the morning, like every one of us has to, and I'm driving to work, I'm not covered. It's a coming and going rule. As a practical matter, you're not. There are exceptions. It's the Evans case, the Thai case, people who are given cars, those sorts of things. But when I'm out of state, when I'm a traveling employee, I don't have a choice. My employer has put me in the position of I'm traveling to the hotel. I have to walk down to get my meals. I have to walk in and out of the building. I have to do certain narrow things that bring me in furtherance of my employer's purpose. So if you're there acting in furtherance of your employer's purpose, yes, under the general notion that you're an employee and you're out of town, so from the time you leave to the time you come back, you're covered. I candidly, I think that's nonsensical. I don't know whether that addressed your question sufficiently or not. I'm probably running a little...
So how would you articulate the deviation rule? Keying off what you just said, you recognize that if you have to fly out to San Francisco and argue at the Ninth Circuit, and so you have to travel out of Nevada, take Uber, ride the cable cars, whatever. At what point are you deviating from that purpose? How would you articulate that test?
When you have fulfilled your business purpose. My purpose was to fly to the airport, drive from the airport to the Supreme Court, walk from the parking lot into the building. Now, do I have some latitude to go get something to eat? I probably do. If I fall down in the parking lot doing it, am I covered?
What would you say?
It's arguable that it's arguable that I may be. There's case law to suggest in other jurisdictions that I might, and
there is. I mean, that the case law's out there.
There's case law to suggest that there is, and there's case law to suggest that there's not. I will remind you that the case law that says that there is also based upon liberal interpretation of the statutes. We did away with liberal interpretation of the statutes 25, 30 years ago. So when you're applying those standards, the ones you're asking me about, they're based on an entirely different premise, one that this court has specifically rejected, that the legislature has specifically rejected.
So how would you articulate the deviation rule that would accept a traveling employee from coverage?
When you have fulfilled your business purpose.
Why wouldn't we consider the test that's enunciated in Holt? And that is, recreational activity should not be deemed within the course of employment unless it is of direct benefit to the employer beyond the intangible value of employee health and morale common to all kinds of recreation and social life.
I don't necessarily disagree with that, but again, it goes back to the same question that was posed. Your employer has directed these things versus something that you've done purely on your own. You're either fulfilling or continuing to fulfill a business purpose by doing so.
It would seem like a team-building exercise or activity required by the Chief Justice is something that is going to be of direct benefit to the employer outside of just the intangible value of moral and social life.
You're continuing to fulfill that business purpose. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
In this case, as I understand the ruling by the appeals officer, the appeals officer applied the going and coming rule as opposed to the traveler doctrine.
I think she addressed both, to be candid with you.
Is that your view of the decision?
Of the appeals officer's decision?
Yes. So where in the decision did the appeals officer apply the test out of Holt that I've just referenced?
She did not. To suggest that she adopted Holt or addressed Holt, she did not.
So isn't remand warranted to investigate that?
I don't believe so, because I believe there are sufficient facts at this point to sustain the opinion as it's written.
P. appeals officer didn't apply this test.
Understand.
And under the rule, I get your point in response to Justice Pickering's question about what do you do with the factual determination, but you would agree, would you not, that this court assesses errors of law de novo?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
And if we found that the Holt test applies to recreational activity, wouldn't we direct the appeals officer, the district court, and the appeals officer to apply that test? I'm not saying the result would have been different. I'm just concerned about the fact that that seems to be the test in our law.
If you adopt Holt as dispositive of the issue, and I'm not sure that it is, but if you adopt Holt as dispositive of the issue, again, I can't look you in the eye and say that the appeals officer applied it and therefore it has been addressed.
Why shouldn't we apply Holt in this context? Why shouldn't we apply Holt both to a regular employer as well as to a traveling employer?
Well, one, because you're not being asked to do it that way, for one. You're being asked to apply two different standards under two different scenarios. And because you're being asked to apply...
Well, as I understand it, we're being requested by the appellant to say, in the context of a traveling employee, they are fully covered for all matters all the time.
Regardless, correct.
This court doesn't have to accept that proposition, but we can recognize that a traveling employee would be covered by the same standard that's set forth in Holt.
Certainly you could find that. Absolutely you could.
And if we did, it would be necessary for the appeals officer to assess that in the context of this case.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I timed out a long time ago here. So
you still have a 127.
Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, unless there are any other questions, I feel like I've addressed the issue sufficiently, but I don't want to step away if any of you have questions or concerns about my position or the arguments that have been made.
Justice Stiglitz, were you?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Diaz, the clock is set for 4 minutes for you.
The position that I'm urging the court to adopt, or that your decision on the position that I'm asking you to adopt, shouldn't be based on cost of the insured. It should be based on properly addressing, on giving the lower courts the guidance they need to address these sorts of issues. Traveling employees, I mean, this court has never heard a traveling employee case, and yet all of us travel for work. Our state has thousands of employees that travel for work. Some come here for, will come to Carson City for a day. Some will, when I go to Vegas, I'll stack my calendar, I'll stay a week, maybe even two.
Let me ask you this, just to get your view on Holt and how you think it's applicable or not applicable in this case.
What is applicable about
the Holt decision?
I can't speak to Holt. I don't have it.
Okay, let me ask you another question then. Why wouldn't this be a legislative fix, something this dramatic and this broad, as opposed to having us craft something?
Well, because we already have 233, 616B, 612, sub 3. We already have that. So we've already got one prong of the traveling employee doctrine done. I mean, it's in the course. Paid travel is in the course.
But you got to admit, it certainly doesn't indicate something this broad, that they're, well, anytime they're traveling, that they're covered. I keep going back to course and scope of employment and coming and going.
And I kept thinking, I thought about that for the last week. And it struck me that there's no exceptions in the statute. There's nothing. We have a blanket statement by the legislature, which I think should be taken as the public policy of the state, that workers on business trips are covered. Period.
Mr. Diaz,
it doesn't have an exception in it.
Mr. Diaz, do you think that's the intention, that people who are traveling, if they're doing purely recreational activity, that that is the, it was the intention that that be covered by workers' comp?
Justice Stiglitz, with all due respect, it has to, analysis of a perceived recreational activity no, has to be on a case-by-case
okay,
basis.
So for purposes of this, what I'm asking you is, if I'm telling you it's a, not with regards to this, if it is a purely recreational activity, is it, I'm not saying that's what that is here. I'm saying if it is a purely recreational activity, is it your position that for a traveling employee, it's covered by workers' comp?
It's on a case-by-case basis, but I'd say yes. On the I think that if a guy stays in the Mandalay Bay and he decides to go down to the pool and surf those waves or whatever and has an accident, I think that's covered. If he decides to go shoot machine guns down at the rental machine gun place and catches something in his eye, I think that's covered. It's reasonable. It's reasonable under the circumstances. And I don't think that, I just don't think that traveling employees need to be locked up in their rooms with no recreation whatsoever. I would suggest that going to dinner is recreation. Going to have a drink is recreation, and yet that is within the course and scope of employment.
How would you define
it arises out of employment?
You spoke earlier in terms of a significant departure.
Yes.
How do you define that?
It's got to be, it has to be, the departure has to be such, if I can finish answering the question, it has to be such that it's so remote from the customary or reasonable practice that it can't be said to be an incident of employment. The activity, and I'm quoting out of Larson's, if it's usual, normal, or reasonable in the circumstances, then it's still in the course of employment. If Mr. Buma and his colleague had gone for a hang glider ride 2 miles from the ranch, that would probably be stretching it. But going on an ATV ride on the ranch that they were using for home base to do presentations in Houston, I think was ultimately reasonable. Just as reasonable as fishing in the pond, walking on the trails, using a mountain bike to get along. It is not unusual in that situation. Thank you. Unless you have questions, I'll...
I do have one. Are you familiar with the case of Heitman versus Nevada Industrial Commission, 78 Nevada 25?
Probably not. What is the first?
Heitman?
No.
Okay.
Would that would not be a traveling employee case, would it?
Yes, it is. Okay. 1962.
Back from 62. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
This matter will stand submitted. We thank counsel for their arguments. The court will take this under consideration. This matter will stand submitted.